welcome to the Masterson Inheritance. In the years immediately before the Great War, when the century was still young, the Masterson family lived in an England and a world that seemed would never change. Tonight, our teams of performers will attempt to spontaneously bring to life the tribulations of the Masterson family during this Indian summer of innocence. A story based entirely on the suggestions of our studio audience. No script, no rehearsals, just an audience and a couple of microphones. To bring you this story, we have Josie Lawrence, Phelan McDermott, Paul Merton, Caroline Quentin, Lee Simpson, and Jim Sweeney. Right, I'm walking out into our studio audience now to get some suggestions for the story this evening. Now, we're talking about just before the First World War, and what we'd like as our first suggestion is a ladylike occupation.
Suffragette.
Being a suffragette. Was that over there? Is that what you said over there?
Yeah.
All right, then, being a suffragette. You said something as well, sir. What was yours?
Seamstress.
The next suggestion is a suggestion of how somebody might be betrayed.
Adultery.
What was that again?
Adultery.
Adultery. Now, if one of the ladies is being a suffragette, what might be her slightly unusual way of protesting?
Chaining herself to a horse.
Chaining herself to a horse. Now, the last thing is a title for tonight's episode. Now, we'd like it to contain the word Masterson, so the something of the Mastersons or the Mastersons do something, remembering the period we're in.
The Masterson Bunch?
The Masterson Bunch. Sounds like a yoghurt, doesn't it? That's very redolent of the Edwardian era, isn't it? The Masterson Inheritance. This week, the Masterson Bunch. Little had changed at the Masterson's Mayfair London home for many, many decades, and in the first floor parlour sat Jane Masterson, a young, attractive girl with her aunt, Beatrice. Together, they were sewing as they did day in, day out.
In and to, and you've become very, very good at needlepoint, Jenny. Very, very good indeed.
Thanks, Auntie.
Jenny was a term of endearment, even though her name was Jane.
You know, you remind me so much of your dear dead sister,
That's
Jenny.
That's right. It's terrible to lose a twin, isn't it?
Yes. Jane?
Yes, Auntie?
What are you sewing?
Why, I'm sewing I Love Arsenal into these pair of pants.
And what is Arsenal?
It's a football team.
You're a lady, Jane. Don't ever forget that you're a lady, Jane.
Indeed, but why shouldn't I be a fan?
A fan?
A fan.
The only fan I want you to get close to is the one that wipes the droplets of sweat from your forehead when a kind gent asks you to dance.
Oh, but Auntie, I'm so bored. I'm so bored of being trapped in this corseted existence.
Remember, Jane, that ladies are never bored. They're just a little bit knocked at times.
And so we leave them wiping the sweat from their brows with their fans. Oh, how ladylike they were. For drawing up to the front door of this fine London residence was Rupert Masterson, just down from Cambridge. He was met by his loving and doting mother, Emily.
Hello, Mummy.
Oh, you look so fine. You look so young and bright and handsome.
Yes, let's kiss, no tongues. Mummy, I've been doing so well at Cambridge. I think I'm going to get a first.
Oh, come inside. The whole family will be so excited to see you. You're going to be the most successful man the Mastersons have ever bred.
And she clasped him. She clasped him in her ample bosom. Together, they trotted into the house. Upstairs in the front parlour was a less happy scene. Jane was rather boisterous for a girl, and her aunt disapproved, as we have seen.
Why can't you be more feminine like your brother Rupert?
I don't know where he picks all that stuff up from. Do you, Auntie?
Well, university, I suppose.
Yes, and public school.
Yes, and you know he's back from public school this very day.
Why is he?
And I want you to go and make some cake for him. And to generally be rather nice and girly to him. Because, after all, he is going to be the man of the house one day. But I won't bother you with such things, you being a girl with a pea brain and all that.
Auntie!
And with that, the dotty old auntie left the room. Downstairs was a hive of activity. Millie was a little chambermaid, and she was scrubbing the arga, as was her wont of a Monday morning. Into the room crept Charlie. He was a footman, a second footman, in fact, with ambitions to be a first footman. He was a shy fellow, but he did like Millie.
Hello, Millie Gill.
Hello, footman. What are you in the kitchen for?
Well, I thought I'd pop down and see how you're going. What are you going to have for dinner tonight?
What are we going to have for dinner?
Yeah.
Oh, when Master Rupert's back from public school, so I've got to do something really proper. And the cook's off sick. I'm cooking all myself.
You've got to cook it yourself, but you never cooked a meal for somebody who's come back from Cambridge before.
No, never in my life. What do you think they like? Oh. A4 paper, mashed.
Oh, how Charlie...
That sounds absolutely lovely. Here, why don't you do us a nice papier-mâché pudding for afters?
And so she set about her task of cooking. Oh, if only Charlie could speak of the way he felt about her. But he just couldn't. And as he watched her, he couldn't help thinking to himself.
She's a lovely woman, Millie. But I don't know, I mean, I'm just a second footman. One day I might be a first footman and then... Who knows, I might get promoted to 6 inches, but... I can't provide for her. Yeah, I know where you can get a bit of fun for sixpence in Limehouse, but that's no good to these young ladies. They want to walk proud through the park, their parasols over their shoulder, and it's a good trick if you can do it. Not when it's raining, though, you tend to fill up a bit. I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to take a training opportunity scheme. I'm going to learn how to be a duke. It's a bit hazardous, but I'll do it anyway.
So his mind made up, he strode off, purposefully, full of his new mission. In the study was Sir Arthur Masterson, patriarch of the Masterson family and the dynasty. He had asked Rupert into his study to give him a stern talking to. For he had heard that his return from Cambridge had been forced upon him by the authorities there because of his misdemeanors.
Misdemeanors, Rupert.
Oh, God, Jenny.
Don't cry. You big sissy, do you want to feel the back of my hand?
Oh, Daddy, please forgive me. I want to stay at home. I want to do enjoyable things like sewing.
No, Rupert. I see a completely different life for you with no sewing involved. Not in any way, shape, or form. I see you as a soldier, going off to foreign lands, killing people who are perfectly at peace on their own, but going over there, killing them anyway, taking the place over, bringing it back to us, killing off a few working class people on the way. Sort yourself out, Rupert. Be a man. Or else, you're thrown out of this family.
Daddy?
Yes?
What's happened to Jane? Where is she? Is she going to be... dinner this evening.
Jane? Ha!
That was the way he always talked about his daughter. He couldn't help himself. Jane was very upset. She'd walked out and down the street and into Hyde Park. It was then she noticed, over by the bandstand, a very striking-looking woman. She went up and introduced herself.
Hello.
Hello.
I couldn't help noticing that... that you look like a strong, independent woman.
Really?
Yes.
Is it the way I was chewing my own toffees?
Maybe it was that. Maybe it was the sunlight glancing off your beautiful hair and...
I know, it is nice, isn't it?
And that banner you're carrying.
What?
That banner.
This banner?
Stoats for women.
I know. We had to go to a cheap printer.
Oh, but wait. Yes? What do you mean it's votes for women, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Indeed, we thought after a while, why would every woman want a stoat?
I mean, you have
to feed them, look after them, and they can half bite those little buggers.
Oh, yes,
they can.
They can.
More tea, Vicar.
Soap! Why are you carrying that soapbox around with you?
It's because I can stand on this soapbox. Votes for women! Votes for women!
Oh, yes, I can
remember when I had my first pint of lager.
Here with hecklers, it's marvellous!
Indeed. Shut your mouth, there's a hackney cabbage coming. I got these heckles off a very bad printer.
Tell me your message. I'm willing to learn. I'm tired of being trapped in my woman's garb.
See the sign? Votes for women.
Yes?
That for me means that women should have votes. It's implicit in the message.
Let me join your cause. Let me come with you. I shall paint banners. I shall follow you. I shall come with you.
Back at the Masterson's house, Sir Arthur and Emily were together in the drawing room. They were quiet together, they usually were, because between them was a bitterness. For in the past, there had been a betrayal. A very grave betrayal indeed.
Did you have a word with Rupert?
Yes, I did.
You weren't too hard on him, were you?
What's it to do with you? How would you care, you harlot? Don't call me, I will. You broke my heart when you went off with that man. That man whose name I can't even bear to mention.
Cliff.
Yes, Cliff. Lord Cliff. He nearly ruined our marriage. I'm so bitter and twisted. I'm going to find him and kill him. And then this house will return to the way it was.
All right.
And so, after 20 years of burning resentment, he set off to find his rival. Jane was at home. She was talking with Beatrice, her aunt, trying to convince her of her cause.
Don't you see, Auntie? Don't you see? We can take the world into our own hands. We can have a voice in this country. We can earn money. We can do whatever we like.
But what's gauze got to do with it?
Gauze, Auntie?
You said fighting for your gauze. There's some in the first aid kit. I fight for it. It's there. Or in the chemist.
Oh, Auntie. Cause. The rights of our cause.
Oh, with a C.
Yes.
Oh, it's a C word.
Yes, Auntie.
Oh, yes, I'm all in favour of that.
You are?
Oh, no, I think I am, Jane. I like ladylike pursuits, of course I do, but your uncle, God bless him, he will always make me stay at home, and he has such a fine life, such an exciting life, and I think I'd like that life too.
Of course you would.
Where do I sign, Jane?
Come to the meeting tonight, Auntie.
I will, but not a word to Emily or Sir Arthur.
Certainly not.
Sir Arthur was in search of Cliff. He went to the very, very place he thought he would be. His house. It was a smart move, and he was pleased with it. He rapped on the door.
Come in.
Thank you.
Hello, how do you do? Sit yourself down. You'd like a cup of tea?
Maybe I would, maybe I wouldn't. That's for me to know and you to find out. Yes, I would. Damn, get game with.
One or two lumps?
One lump. Cliff.
Oh, you know my name.
Yes, I know your name, and I know your game. And your game's adultery, and it was adultery with my wife 20 years ago. I'm a slow burner.
Yes. Oh, yes. It was the only night of passion I ever had. Very enjoyable it was, I have to say.
You, Cliff.
Do you want a fairy cake?
No.
He was about to strike him. He was about to beat the living daylight out of him when he saw something in Cliff's eyes which made him stop. A little gleaming something. A little slightly attractive something. There stirred something in Sir Arthur that hadn't been stirred for a long time. And it wasn't the tea.
What are you looking at me like that for?
Don't toy with me. You're a very attractive man, Cliff.
Take your hand off me.
No.
No, what are you doing?
I came here today. I came here today to beat the life out of you, but the light in your eyes, the look about you, the way you just carry yourself, you're the most attractive beast I've ever seen. I love you.
Oh, really?
Could you love another man? A man who came here to kill you? A man with a moustache like this?
His balaclava to reveal his moustache. It was a beauty.
Oh, it's very bushy.
Yes. My wife hated this moustache and made me wear a balaclava these last 20 years.
She made you fix it on with Velcro as well.
Yes. But now I can let my moustache hang free. Hang free for a man who appreciates a moustache when he sees one. Move back, he's standing on it.
Oh, sorry. Well, I think that's right. I think you should fight for your own cause. Take your balaclava off if you need to.
You're a very charismatic man,
Claire. And with that...
Do you want another cup of tea?
I'd sooner go upstairs and play funny games.
What, like Twister?
Yes. Come with me.
And so, up the stairs they went to a new experience and a new land. Jane was at her suffragettes meeting.
Jane, the charismatic young woman you met in the park.
That's right, let me introduce you to her. Oh, I can't remember her name.
She hasn't been one yet, I don't
think. Has she not? Can you tell me your name in the park?
My name...
is Lillian. Your name is on your badge.
Oh, yes.
Lillian.
Yes, Sainsbury's checkout girl.
Jean's Aunt Beatrice.
Jean's Aunt Beatrice.
Jane's Aunt Beatrice.
Jean was another dead sister. Very dangerous being a girl in the Masterson family.
So I'm assuming that you're the aunt of the girl Jane who's still alive, but you're also the aunt of the girl Jean who's now dead.
Yes, and Jenny too. Triplets.
Well, we could talk like this all night.
We want to hear your words. Your
speak
words
to
of wisdom.
Speak to us. Speak to the meeting.
Meeting.
Applause, please. Applause, please. For Lillian.
All right.
Lillian had to propose at this meeting a new form of protest, for the old forms of protest were having no effect. The establishment were getting used to them and refuting them at every turn. They needed to find a fresh way to make their point, but somehow it seemed to elude them.
I think we should chain ourselves to horses.
It came to her in a flash.
Chain ourselves to horses what?
Wherever you can get the padlock to fit.
It's a marvellous idea.
Absolutely marvellous.
I mean, you know what?
God, she's shouting again.
It's the derby tomorrow.
Yes.
And the king's horse is running.
The king's horse running at the derby?
Yes, indeed.
God heavens, should we tell the police?
What? We must go down there tomorrow and chain ourselves to anything we can find in the stable.
It is so dangerous, Jane.
Not if you chain yourself to the horse while it's still in the paddock.
That's a wonderful idea. Why didn't I think of that before?
You see, the derby's not as bad as the Grand National. You'll get dragged a bit, but you won't have to go over fences. I tried it last year. I had to take snorkeling equipment. The canal turned, don't you know? Then tomorrow... 2 o'clock, Epsom Downs, in the paddock.
See you there.
Goodbye.
Back at the Mastersons' home, Rupert found his mother, Emily, dissolved into tears. She was so unhappy.
Mummy, you dissolved.
It's your father. He's gone off to what? Kill a man.
To kill a man? Why?
Oh, you wouldn't understand, but I'll tell you. It's a man called Cliff, very attractive man, charismatic way with words. 20 years ago, he swept me off my feet, up the stairs and onto the bed. It's a night of passion that I've never known before or since.
Oh, really? Why, Mummy, I never knew about that.
You should know, because you're Cliff's son.
Oh, really?
Yes.
You mean I'm a bit like him?
Yes. Frankly, I'm amazed your father never noticed.
Excuse me, Master Rupert. Would you care for another glass of ink and some litmus paper?
Oh, lovely. Thank you very much.
Rupert, don't you understand? You've got to find your father and stop him. Stop whatever he's doing. Not your real father, but your pretend father. The father you thought was your father. Who's going to kill the one that really is your father. You've got to get there and find them wherever they are and stop it happening. Roop.
I've got to... Just a minute. Let me get this right. I've got to go and stop my...
The man you believe was your father.
From killing my real father?
Yes.
Cliff?
Yes.
How should I stop him?
With a gun, dear Rupert. With a gun, dear Rupert. Dear Rupert, with a gun.
And so he went to the gun cupboard and took down a 12-bore shotgun.
Now you've got the gun, Rupert. Now you know of it, you must do. You must go through the streets of London, picking a house at random. Two of them are in there. Then take that gun and shoot the man you believed was your father.
Okay.
Millie was busy cooking up a couple of notepads for evening supper. They were bubbling away nicely when a figure appeared in the doorway. A strangely familiar figure, but one more imposing than perhaps it should have been.
Hello?
Hello? Don't you recognise me, Millie Miguel?
You look like Charlie, but you're not sounding like Charlie.
Charlie? Who the hell's Charlie? My name is Charles.
Charles?
Yes. The second footman here all these years ago.
You've changed your ways.
I have changed my ways.
Oh, God, you're a joke.
I'm doing my best. By the way, a duke, sorry.
Charles, do you still want to marry me?
No, I've gone right off you. I'm going to marry Lady Astor, don't you know?
Well, I don't care who you marry, because look at this. It's a pamphlet. I almost smashed it in with the A4. Then I read what it said on it. Votes for Women. That's what Jane and Lady Beatrice is up to.
I don't need
men anymore. Don't care how bleeding posh they are. I'm going to be a suffragette.
Yes, I'm sure you are, Millie.
Here, what's that sticking out your pocket? It's a ticket to the Derby on Saturday.
Yes, I always buy my ticket to the Derby in advance and in case I can't get in. It's only on ups and downs, you know.
Well, I hope you
get a first row seat.
I hope you are going to be there, Charles, because there's a lady I'd like you to meet called Lillian.
You won't find me within 500 yards.
With that, he strode off. In the stables, Derby morning, the women all crept in.
He's handsome, isn't he?
Really handsome.
Can't wait to get chained up to him.
Now, remember what we're here for.
That's right.
I'll give you 10 minutes and we'll come back.
Okay.
I'll be a lookout, Mum. I'll just stand outside.
Good girl. Now, lift me up over his flank.
Jane?
Yes?
There's just one thing I'm worried about, Lillian.
What's that?
Isn't the jockey going to notice?
It's all right.
She's going to disguise herself as a horse blanket.
Look!
Good God!
Not bad, is it?
Where's she gone? What's that horse blanket doing there?
Quick, the jockey's coming!
Right.
Off they went to leave her. Leave her to a very dangerous mission. She was risking her life for her sister. Jockey mounted and he didn't notice her.
Oh!
They trotted out towards the starting gate. Do you mind?
Oh, I can't wait till he cancels.
Outside Cliff's house was Rupert, his shotgun in his hand. He'd been drawn to this house, drawn as if by some mysterious force. He kicked in the door.
Here we go.
Hello? Anybody home?
What are you doing here?
What are you doing with that balaclava on your head?
You wouldn't understand.
I've come to kill you.
Kill me? Why?
I'm doing the wrong voice. Don't care, though. You're not my real father. My real father's upstairs, and I know it. I'm going to kill you.
He looked down. He looked down at the man who had been his father, lying bleeding on the floor. On the floor, rather. In rushed Cliff. He saw Sir Arthur on the floor, knelt down beside him and held him in his arms.
Oh, dear.
He looked up at a young man holding a gun. He didn't know it was his son. All he knew was he had killed the man who'd had a beautiful night of passion with. He rushed at him, and the other barrel of the shotgun went off. They stood together, Cliff and Rupert together, face to face. And slowly, slowly, Rupert sank to the floor.
Let's go and have a cup of tea.
The starting gate of the derby. Great excitement. And they were off. It was then that Jane revealed herself to the world.
It's me!
She slipped and she fell under the hooves of the horse. She was trampled. The horses raced on and left. Left on the turf of Epsom was Jane, her broken body lying there. The other women gathered around her and looked at her. She was breathing her last.
Well,
did we win?
You made a right mess of that, didn't you?
RCB?
Don't listen to Lillian.
No.
You tried your hardest.
We did.
You just failed miserably, that's all.
Thank you.
We had £10 on you each way.
Someday, remember, Jane.
Bang goes the Christmas party.
Women will get the vote.
They will. Will they remember me?
And then Millie came up. Millie, the newest fighter for the cause. A fighter from a lower class, but united in their cause. She had with her the flowers that Charlie had given her. Flowers from a man. But she was going to give this bunch of flowers to a woman.
I've picked these flowers for you. They were given to me by Charlie, but I added to them. And then I heard from a man in the stalls that your father and your brother had died too. So I added some more. Until it became a very big bunch. A Masterson bunch, you could say, I suppose.
Hello, everyone who's...
For everyone, here you are, Jane. We'll all remember you, us normal girls. And one day, who knows, perhaps a lovely lady just as nice as you will govern our country.
And with that, she breathed her last. She lay there on the turf with a bunch of flowers on her breast, but she was never forgotten. Never forgotten because she had the bravery, the courage, and the conviction that is the Masterson inheritance. In the Masterson Inheritance, you heard Josie Lawrence, Fela McDermott, Paul Merton, Caroline Quentin, Lee Simpson, and Jim Sweeney. Dialogue, music, and sound effects were improvised live at the Paris studio. The studio managers were John Whitehall, Wilfred Acosta, and Colin Guthrie. The producer was Phil Clark.